Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. I'm here with my fabulous, fantabulous co-hosts. And before I go there, it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And as one of those fantabulous co-hosts, I am Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And good to be with you again. I'm Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and it's very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of a new online ministry, an events-driven ministry, a Unity ministry called the Unity Center for Universal Prosperity.com.
And the initials for that is UCFYP.com. UCFYP.com. And if I may have one moment to celebrate, we have now launched HoltonProductMall.com. We thought that would be the simplest way to, because that's what everybody calls it. It's like, when is the Holton Product Mall going to be ready? And so we thought, let's just go with it. And Holton Product Mall was available. So all of our products and services are in one place now, and you can easily go there. HoltonProductMall.com. We're very excited.
I really love your applying Occam's razor, going for the simplest thing.
Yes.
Yes.
Simplicity has been our word this year. We're trying to make things as simple as possible.
Me too. So believe it or not, we're on part six, based on a white paper written by our own Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. And of course, we always have that ghostwriter in the background called Reverend Dr. Cher Holton. It's called Free Will or Free Won'ts. And before we're going to launch into that, though, I made a really cool discovery. Our listeners may have remembered we did a lot on an article about Spinoza, philosopher, and that we wondered if New Thought got some of its ideas from Spinoza. We even wondered whether Charles Fillmore knew about Spinoza, and I was reading a unpublished talk from 1930 this week, and I'm going to read the first two sentences that occur right in the middle of the talk. So every one of us can develop this soul power to see God not only as a mathematical proposition. Spinoza portrayed God as a mathematical necessity. So Charles Fillmore was definitely aware of Spinoza. And even though our material didn't talk about Spinoza thinking it was a mathematical necessity, we thought that was really cool. And how we clued into that, right? We're kind of patting ourselves on our own shoulders. Yes.
That synchronicity at work. That was so cool. Yeah.
And you know, quantum physicists would tell us that we live in a mathematical universe.
We live in a mathematical universe. So I know from previous material that Charles was into Eddington, and it was Eddington and Bertrand Russell that were very prominent panpsychists in the years between the two wars, World War I and World War II. So there's all these synchronicities and connections, which I think are very important for us to be aware of. Mm-hmm. Amen. Okay, there.
So cool.
Take her away.
Okay, and we are wrapping up, right? We have decided that this is going to be our final one on free will, although the discussion has really just begun for all of you, I hope. But for this purpose, it is. Let's just look at what Bill had to say in the white paper as we wrap up. Studies highlight that there are a myriad of processes that take place within our brain and body. And although the subconscious mind and conscious mind coexist, the subconscious mind seems to do more of the work faster and is aware of information faster than our conscious mind is. As a matter of evolving, evidence-based fact, our subconscious architecture has always been an era or two ahead of our lagging conscious thought processes.
That is really important material. And I think of the time I was walking down a path in a woods and jumped and then realized I saw a snake.
Wow.
So my subconscious mind kicked in. So I was grateful for it at that point. Okay, Cher, go on.
Well, I just want to talk about that for a second because I think that is such a good summary of all the things we've been talking about. And it doesn't say one or the other is the only one. I just love the idea that they coexist.
Yes.
So it's not like our conscious mind doesn't think about things or even make decisions about things. It's just that the subconscious mind is able to do that. And my feeling is provide a platform for us to make the decision at a conscious level.
Yeah, and that it's working faster, I think, because there's no interference like we have with our waking consciousness.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. We don't see all the confusion or all the possible blurs and cloudiness. Yep.
And just as an aside, here I go, for all of our futurists out there, we talk about the speed of the subconscious mind being an era or two ahead of our lagging consciousness. By 2080, as artificial intelligence and machines begin to really become more prevalent in our society, our world society, it's interesting that right now our silicon-based machines can think faster, can gather information faster, can recall information faster than we humans already.
Oh, absolutely. The recall is
amazing.
It's phenomenal. Yep.
Yeah.
That's why Google searches are so fast.
Right. Yep. So, and the question, of course, will always be, where is this going into the future? And with consciousness, when you look at logarithms, it's almost like there's a consciousness at work there. And it's an interesting field that we will be explored more and more.
And as Paul mentioned a little earlier, when he mentioned panpsychism, panpsychists suggest to us that just about everything has consciousness.
That's the belief. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So from a spiritual perspective, the question will be, do all these things have a soul? Depending on how we define soul, which is another whole topic.
You know, that we can go down a really, really deep rabbit hole.
Okay? Yes, we could.
And before the show, we talked about those ooh squirrel moments.
Yeah.
Where something shiny attracts us. And we're really good about that in this show. And we can make a decision now. We're going to have a seventh show. Or we can move on. What's your choice?
I think move on with this. And it could be that the existence of a soul could be another whole podcast.
Yes.
Well, you know what? I think where we're going with this, as we wrap it up, we're marrying neuroscience and philosophy. So I think a nice follow-up to that would even be a discussion on soul.
It would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So that's a little teaser for people, but see how we just generate that as we go.
Yep.
So why don't we wrap this part up? And according to the paper, we're wrapping up as well. So as we wrap up this discussion, there's a brand new field. This is what Bill was referring to. There's a brand new field emerging called the neurophilosophy of free will. The neurophilosophy of free will. Doesn't that sound cool?
Does.
It's only been around since spring of 2019, so that's not that long ago. In mid-March of 2019, as part of the launch of the program, 90 researchers from 40 universities gathered at the International Conference on the Neuroscience of Free Will. Can you imagine that? There was an actual conference on the neuroscience of free will.
We need to Google that.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds kind of interesting. It was held in Irvine, California. So isn't that cool, he says. they were freewheeling with free will. Our subconscious came up with that attempted humor before we shared it with you. This is little Bill's aside. Our penchant for humor influenced us. Anyway, back to neurophilosophy of free will. Among other things, this field discusses the role of the frontal cortex of the brain in the planning of our actions, our selections from various options, and the organizing of our behavior over time. It considers neurological evidence for and against the claim that this region of the brain is the seat of the will in us humans. It argues that the functions of willing, which is deliberation, planning, and the like, which I guess we can also talk about the power of wisdom, understanding, and will coming together, yes, when, from a 12 powers perspective.
Yes. So willing is a process, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it brings in the deliberation, planning, and things. Those are really a function of our wisdom and understanding from a 12 powers perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah, and will is where we actually choose, are distributed throughout the brain. Though the prefrontal areas play a pivotal role by providing a link between the cortical regions involved in higher cognitive functioning and other parts of the brain that are the sources of emotion, feeling, and motor reaction. I know we might be getting lost in the weeds during that paragraph because it's very scientific, but they offer what they call natural autonomy. And here's where I think we can perk up and hear this: self-determination unaided by supernatural powers that could exist even in an entirely determined universe.
I think you need to read that again.
Okay, so they offer what they call natural autonomy. And this is self-determination unaided by supernatural powers that could exist even in an entirely determined universe, which to me just almost sounds like
an oxymoron.
Oxymoron, that's the word, yeah. I was trying to think of, yes.
Well, what's interesting about that statement is look at the two key factions you've got involved in this new science. You've got science, neuroscience on the one hand, determination or determinism, and then you've got supernatural powers, sort of kind of leans in the philosophical direction. Mm-hmm. And so you have a meeting of these two polarities in agreement that there's something to both of them to a degree. But one has its place. They're saying the supernatural powers, or our supernatural abilities, if you will, may have a place.
And an intersection to the philosophy here is the philosophy we talk about, is that I definitely believe the universe is determined, but not predetermined.
Ah, yes.
That the laws and the principles that underlie natural science dictate, without any activity, without any agency, dictate what is possible and what isn't possible. And so there is a determinism going on there, as far as I can see.
Yep. Excellent point.
And within that, we still have the opportunity to make choices about how we want to move forward on things.
Right? Yeah. So in our case, going back to unity philosophy, is there are laws of mind and there are principles, including the 12 powers, and they determine in an unactive way what is possible and what isn't possible. And so they don't dictate what's possible. They create the sum total of what they are, create a range of possibility, but do not determine any possibilities in a specific way.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's
wow.
quite
I
a
I actually got that
right
out
there.
Of my mouth.
That was pretty powerful. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That actually sort of summarizes what that last sentence that we talked about is really saying, mm-hmm. I think. Okay, so philosophers and neuroscientists have joined forces through this new area of study to see whether science can solve the mystery of free will. Philosophers have spent millennia debating whether we have free will without reaching a conclusive answer. So I think that's interesting, because if philosophers have spent a millennia debating it and can't come up with a conclusive answer, we are certainly not going to come up with a conclusive answer in one conversation.
Well, I would say if anybody's read anything written by a philosopher, it's totally understanding why they haven't come to a conclusion.
This is true.
Bill and I have been reading that book, Galileo's Error, where Goff lays out all these different philosophical points of view, and all of them end up with essentially, and none of it can be proven.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yep. It's all speculation and conjecture.
Which kind of ties in with our whole idea of questioning unquestioned answers.
It does. It does.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. And you have to be willing to sit in the question of not knowing in order to do that. But that's how we grow in our understanding.
And for those of you who've been interested and perhaps have done some reading on what caused the quote-unquote Big Bang that started our universe, science, the scientists, just as Paul was talking about the philosophers, science has about 20 different scenarios on how this universe began. And only one of those scenarios has to do with the Big Bang.
It's really fascinating stuff.
Okay, well, philosophers and neuroscientists, I think I read this, have joined forces to discover this, and they haven't reached a conclusive answer. Neuroscientists optimistically entered the field in the 1960s, armed with the tools they were confident could reveal the origin of the actions of the brain. 6 decades later, as of this discussion that we're having right now, they've reached the same conclusion as the philosophers. And I love the way this is stated. Free will and or free won't are complicated. Yes, they are. How does our brain enable conscious causal control of our actions and decisions? How do our conscious intentions lead to actions? Now, you might ask, why does this matter? Studying it is important because it teaches us about the processes in the brain and how things like volition come about. And Bill goes into a discussion here about how that has implications with the legal system, which I don't know if we need to really get into.
Well, I think it would be curious. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So it has implications for the legal system. For example, which distinguishes between voluntary and involuntary actions? It also has implications for motor disorders like Parkinson's disease, where people have a hard time with self-initiated movements. If we understand more about how the brain produces self-initiated movement, we may be able to add another layer to motor disorder research.
Wow.
So that is interesting.
Well, if we're interesting legally, that may bring into the question at some point in time in our future, are you truly, quote unquote, innocent until you're proven guilty?
Right. Exactly. And pulled into question is, if things are being determined from the subconscious level, then is there really free will when somebody murders somebody?
Exactly.
And it gets really complicated really fast.
Yep.
I could see a good lawyer bringing that into the discussion, because that would be difficult to, you could just blur a jury's mind in a heartbeat with that one.
Or blow their minds.
Blow their minds,
Or both.
Or both, yeah. You have to pull out the movie 12 Angry Men. That's a great movie to watch, an old movie, but wow, it brings that into play. So the basic questions concerning free will still are, 1, whether we're able to completely, consciously choose other than we actually do, which I don't know, we might want to pause after each of these for a second.
Let's do. So I think we came to the conclusion that in a decision might arise into our awareness from our subconscious mind, and from our conscious mind, we can choose to do that thing or not. And whether that's coming from our subconscious mind then becomes sort of irrelevant.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because we are going to do what we do, right?
Yeah. And whether it comes from our subconscious mind or not, I would guess some of our decisions are in fact influenced by the subconscious patterns and biases, but also could be equally influenced by our current experience.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So that whole influence issue becomes even more important. The second issue concerning free will is whether our choices are made intelligibly without inside or outside cognitive hijackers. Okay. I love that term.
So that's a great term, but I don't know what you mean. What do you mean by cognitive hijackers?
Well, this is the results now from that new science. I'm quoting what they determined as a result of their conference. I'm guessing that we talk about the definitions now in terms of what makes free will or not, is that whether you have outside influences that impact upon the decisions you make, which don't make it necessarily free will, and you definitely got subconscious inside patterns and biases, for example, that might influence whether it's free will or not free will.
Okay.
They hijack your what you would think would be a free choice. That's been hijacked on either inside or outside influences.
Okay.
Yeah, I really think that happens a lot, the cognitive hijacker. I love that term. Because we have
an example of that. The Utkani moment and the squirrel. You know, it's like we were preparing for this podcast, and Cher had an ooh shiny squirrel moment. when she saw something moving on the cord of her computer.
Right.
She had to stop and figure out that was a spider before we went on. Right? Yep. So that was an outside hijack.
Yep. And things can do that all the time. Or pressure that somebody has from, maybe I don't want to lose a job, so I make choices that I normally wouldn't make that are not in alignment with my values, but they are, right now, keeping my job might be more important. That would be an example.
Or you see, it's a very hot day, you're walking on the street and you pass somebody that has a wonderful two-storied ice cream.
Two scoops.
And your attention is drawn to that. Mm-hmm. Two scoops. Mm-hmm. So two scooper.
And you're going to do that, right?
That's a squirrel.
We're going to go get ice cream, which was not in your mind.
There you go.
Okay. And the third one is whether we're really the conscious originators of the totality of our choices or influenced entirely and consistently by subconscious and or external forces or both simultaneously. Many times it's a both and experience. And that's what I think is the case.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And we're going to have to wrap it up right there. I'm going to leave this as kind of a tease. If you want more on this, you can get Bill's white light paper at their website, which you can find at
HoltonProductMall.com. And white light papers is one of the separate menu items.
Exactly. And so now we turn our attention to the Absolute Word, which is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this comes from Sunday, August 2nd, 2020, and the word is compassion. I am lovingly kind and compassionate. Compassion is the awareness of another's hardship combined with the desire to ease it while providing comfort. Compassion arises from my use of the principles of love, generosity, and benevolence. Jesus is my role model. The authors of the Gospels reported on Jesus's legendary compassion. He demonstrated awareness of the needs and feelings and comforts of friends and strangers alike. He eased it while providing comfort. Jesus did not turn away from social outcasts. He healed them and shared meals with them. His compassion fed a multitude and restored wine to a wedding reception. Jesus wept when Lazarus died. Even when his disciples deserted him as he was crucified, Jesus focused on forgiveness. When I'm aware of another's distress, I listen deeply with an open mind and heart. My kind words and loving presence provide comfort. I am lovingly kind and compassionate. I am lovingly kind and compassionate. And as just a quick little aside, I begin adding feeling words to these affirmations or assertions. So here I add lovingly when I could have just said, I am kind and compassionate.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I like that too.
So that's like another tweak. And so once again, I'm grateful for our listeners. I'm grateful to Bill and Cher. And I'm signing off now. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck saying goodbye. Goodbye, friends.
Bye, guys.
Bye.